Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Trauma. It is affecting our children. We know this in alarming rates. Physical, mental abuse, what they see, what they hear. In the second of our three-part conversation this week on parenting, tonight we focus on how to help children if they have experienced any form of trauma. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. Experiences with your child, those that you know that are children, teens, preteens, how you've handled that, what those experiences have been like. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Joining us tonight to help move this conversation along, in studio with us, is Dr. Satira Streeter, licensed clinical psychologist and executive director of Ascension Psychological in Anacostia, and Yashawn Mance, assistant professor with the Department of Psychology here at Howard University, and Yolanda Nelson Swain, program director with Roberta's House. Thank you all so much for joining us. Very important conversation. Before we start, I want to talk a little bit about something that recently happened in the district. 9-year-old boy arrested by a D.C. police officer, chased, and then handcuffed. And it was videotaped and aired. And I want to play a little bit of his reaction and the reaction of his mother. Let's play first the reaction of the 9-year-old as he was being handcuffed.
What did he do?
Where's his parents?
Now, the child was not charged with the crime, but the boy's mother had this reaction to her son being detained.
I was devastated. I was devastated. I was traumatized for my son having to go through that. His use of force was unnecessary. My son was not a threat. He was not committing a crime. He was not harming anyone. It should have never been to that.
Now, D.C.'s Attorney General Carl Racine has launched an investigation into this issue. So, our panelists tonight, again, this is just one of many instances. This is just, I'm assuming it's going to be a traumatic situation for this 9-year-old. Dr. Streeter, when we hear the reaction of the 9-year-old, when we hear the reaction of the mother, first of all, would you define this as a traumatic experience?
Right. This is an absolute trauma. And when I think of what the little boy's reaction now will be when faced with the police, when he's told he's going to get in trouble, when he knows that trouble can look like this, now that this is going to have longstanding impact. And then for the mother, not knowing if her child is safe, like really, you know, as a mother of a black boy, you always kind of have in your mind when it's going to be their first encounter with the police. But this encounter happening at 9, there's nothing to really prepare you for that. So this is extremely traumatic.
Yolanda Nelson Swain, you deal in counseling, and I'm sure you have to deal with young people of this age. How would you handle this situation, either in counseling the parent or the child?
Well, actually, what we do is peer support group sessions. And so with that, we have other children who have experienced some type of traumatic event, and we have them to come together to talk about that experience. It helps to talk and to get it out, and then to hear how someone else has dealt with that experience, or how traumatic it was for them. And we kind of coach them with provide them with some coping skills, different coping skills to get through that, help them to understand that it was, in fact, a traumatic event, and you may experience some emotions and feelings behind that. And we kind of help them to cope through those experiences and feelings.
Dr. Mance, I know it's very difficult sort of to quantify incidents like this, right? How unusual is something like this that happens and that we see and hear? Or is that what makes it unusual, that we actually see it and tape and hear it?
That's a great question. I do believe we're getting increased exposure to social media, thanks to social media, people just being very vigilant. If you think about just within the past, 5 years, the number of, I would say, police-involved traumatic experiences that we see Black and brown people experiencing has increased. And I think it's more so just because we're having exposure to it. Is it just an increase in the amount of incidences? I would probably say no. It's just more so that we have the exposure to it, and we have to be mindful of the trauma that comes when you see those types of incidences. A term that's typically used is race-based trauma. So that trauma that comes from having these experiences is based on your race. Whether it's being stigmatized, discriminated against, just the trauma that comes from that day-to-day experiences of being marginalized.
And Dr. Streeter, Dr. Mance talked about what we see and hear, and I mentioned that in the opening. Can you talk a little bit about the impact of what young people see, what they see through social media, as Dr. Mance had mentioned, what you see on television? Studies are telling us how many sort of violent incidents young kids, right, are seeing, whether it's through the news, whether it's through video games. What's the effect of that? And again, is that part of sort of the effects of trauma?
Right. So you, once you see those type of images over and over again, you begin to normalize things that just simply are not normal. So you begin to believe that the world operates in that way. You know, one thing that we know now are people who are traumatized or exposed to trauma, that it actually reconfigures your brain so that the way that you even respond to trauma changes. If it's something that you see all the time, and one thing that happens is you're always on. You're always ready to go into like a fight or freeze mode because this trauma is just always persistently coming at you.
Yolanda, have you seen differences in your experiences over the years as social media sort of has ramped up and children have access to more than, say, what we had when we were children? Do you see the effects of that?
Absolutely. Like Dr. Streeter mentioned, in the games, we see on social media the videos that they're posting. Even just turning on the news, you see all these traumatic events are taking place, and children are seeing that. And it is somewhat becoming normalized for some, but then others, it's causing post-traumatic stress disorder.
I'm glad you brought that up, because Dr. Mance, I was going to ask, how as a parent, how do you recognize that? How do you identify that it's post-traumatic disorder? Is there something that gives us a clue to that's what's happening with young children as a parent to know what we do with that?
So first, to be able to identify what are some problematic behaviors or essentially the dysregulation that may be in response to a traumatic event. So you may see, let's say we have this 9-year-old boy. He may be going through a developmental regression. So at one point in time where he was more independent and autonomous and outgoing and engaging, you may see him beginning to regress to an earlier developmental stage, now kind of being a little bit more clingy than usual, or having difficulties with sleeping and eating, and even difficulties with attention. Because when we think about the impact that trauma has on, just as Dr. Streeter was saying, that imprint, if you will, almost like that imagery, that imprint that trauma has, it impacts the brain. So therefore, you have the amygdala essentially processing this information to then tell you how to react. So now you have this hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. And in this hypervigilance, you're always, as she was stating, you're always on. So what ends up happening when there's a traumatic experience, you process that in a very fragmented way. So a lot of times when we go through our day-to-day, we process information, and it's a narrative, it's a story. And so therefore we can use the stories that have happened previously to kind of navigate how we move through the world, if you will. So I'm familiar with what it looks like to sit in a classroom. I'm familiar with what it looks like to ride on the bus. But when a traumatic experience happens, it becomes fragmented. And so what ends up happening is that your brain processes it in a very fragmented way, and you have these sensory stores. So your sensory stores is taking in this information in a very fragmented way. Where I'm going with this is essentially you have multiple triggers. At any given time, you can be triggered because it's the story, you remember it in a very fragmented way. So now this young boy may be sitting in a classroom and he may remember the smell of the policeman's hand or even his breath. And he may have sitting in a classroom learning, and all of a sudden he gets a wisp of a smell and it takes them right back into that incident. Yes. And that's what trauma does. It is unpredictable. You're hypervigilant, difficulty concentrating. You're always in protective mode, right?
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Our discussion tonight, part of our three-part series. Tonight we are talking about dealing with trauma, traumatic experiences that children experience, and how parents and adults, supervisors, grandparents can help children work themselves through those traumatic experiences. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines now. Aaron calling from Fort Washington, Maryland. Aaron, go right ahead with your question or your comment.
Thank you. Doc, I hear what you're saying, but what we're not talking about here is accountability. It starts at home. The little boy was doing something that he was not supposed to be doing, was sitting up against somebody's car. The officer told him to move on or get off the car, get back on the street. Maybe it was for his own safety. He mouthed back at authority. Now, the cop, you know, was just telling him whatever the lawful thing to do was, and then he got smart. Everybody's forgetting this. This thing called home training and respect. If we're not teaching that at a young age, these things like this would happen.
Aaron,
we wouldn't have to be.
Aaron, let me ask you this. But is it appropriate, if we take everything that you're saying is correct, right, that there's not enough home training, the young man shouldn't have been leaning against the car, the cop told him to move, he didn't. I think maybe the contesting of the issue is that did the policeman have to chase the boy down and then handcuff him?
Okay. I work in that same area. Maybe he was trying to send the message to save this boy's life. Because every day I see right here in the same area in the community that I work in, people are shot and killed over some of the ridiculous things. Maybe this was the wake-up call that you're supposed to respect authority. Sometimes we make excuses for, well, the officer chased him or this would happen. Maybe this scared him straight. Maybe this stopped what could have become a dangerous behavior that could have cost him his life later on.
Okay, thank you so much, Aaron. Let me let our panel address that. I'm sort of going to throw that little balloon up in the air and see who wants to try to grab it.
I think, Aaron,
Dr. Mance,
you make some very interesting points, but I think for me as a psychologist, one of the things in the realm of this conversation, we're talking about trauma, is more so in regards to how do we handle these incidences, and more specifically, what are the implications for this young boy? So we can have the conversation to kind of tease apart what led to it. We could talk about parenting, but I really do believe that is a different conversation as it relates to the traumatic experience that this young boy may have had in this interaction. So now how do we then, okay, let's say that we had everything that Aaron said, we can say, okay, we substantiate that. But then the question still, how do we deal with the trauma?
All right, we're going to continue this conversation and sort of follow up more so on what Dr. Mance says. How do we deal with not only the trauma that Aaron talked about, but other traumas that children are dealing with? So we're going to continue this conversation on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown is next on 96.3 WHUR. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Children dealing with trauma and how parents and adults can help them get through it. We'll be right back.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight we are continuing our three-part conversation, rather, on parenting. And tonight we're talking about how parents and adults, supervisors, grandparents, those who are looking after children, help those children deal with traumatic experiences. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight in studio is Dr. Satira Streeter, a licensed clinical psychologist and executive director of Ascension Psychological in Anacostia, and Yashawn Mance, assistant professor with the Department of Psychology at Howard University, and Yolanda Nance Swain, program director with Roberta's House. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Streeter, let's talk a little bit, if we can, about areas. Are there different experiences? Are children more susceptible to traumatic experiences in urban areas, say, versus other areas where they might live and reside?
Absolutely. One thing that we know is African-American children are more susceptible to traumas. In issues such as poverty plays a role, issues such as the vast rates that there's fatherlessness in terms of fathers being out of the home and not being able to protect children. All of these things make children more vulnerable to that. Another big thing that makes people vulnerable is gender. What we know about African-American girls, that 60% of them, the statistics say 60% of girls will be sexually molested by the time they're 18 years old. So being an African-American girl in an urban area is just like a triple threat in terms of putting you in harm's way of trauma.
Yolanda, how do you deal with that? Do you have to deal differently with parents and children, preteens who come for help in the peer counseling, who say maybe dealing with things differently, boys versus girls? What's the approach? Do you have to take an approach? Is it a one kind of size fits all?
Well, in our arena, which we do, again, more of the peer support for loss, grief support in regards to loss, homicide. So it's kind of the question. I can't really mm-hmm. say that I have had that experience where we do understand that boys, girls, men, women, children, adults, all grieve or experience trauma in a different way. So in that aspect, we kind of address it based on more or less their age, age appropriateness.
And so, and you're dealing too, and especially when you talk about homicides, mm-hmm. that has such a finality to it, that mm-hmm. what you're dealing with, that someone has been
yes.
lost. Are the challenges greater because of that sort of situation that you're dealing with in terms of trauma?
Absolutely. Homicide is a whole nother beast, especially when you talk about loss. And just the anger, the rage, the wanting to retaliate, all of that stuff encompasses having lost someone to homicide.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Mance, I do want to follow up with Dr. Streeter because she sort of opened the subject about gender, and I sort of had it on my list that I wanted to talk about. We talked about the little 9-year-old boy, right, that sort of was handcuffed. And Dr. Streeter says it is different with girls. I mean, we're looking at 60%, as Dr. Streeter said, before they're 18 or sexually abused or assaulted in some ways. You know, I've got a daughter who's 15, and you hear this news, you don't want them to come out of the house. Mm-hmm. So I think part of the question is, how do you even deal with that if you're trying to be protective and to protect them from anything that's traumatic? Can you even do that? I think I know the answer to that, but I'm asking you since you've got the doctor title.
Can we protect them from trauma? So it sounds like we're trying to have more of a preventive approach. And
is there any way, I mean, we kind of know how life is, so is there any way or are there measures that we can take, I guess, to lessen the incident of traumatic situations?
That's a great question. I would say not be afraid to have the hard conversations, particularly if we're talking about the numbers with 60%. If you want to make it even a little bit more concrete, that's about 1 in 4 when you're thinking about the statistics. So if you had a room of of Black women, and let's say there are five women, you can count one, two, three, four. That one has probably had some type of a violation in some way. So really having conversations that talks about whether it's boundaries, one's space, how one can be vigilant in one's space, and also how to protect yourself when it comes to having ownership of your own body, but at the same time, making sure that you're able to live. You're able to be a young Black girl. You're able to have that childhood experience. So not to parent out of fear, but definitely parent out of love and parent out of arming with information.
Well, I must admit, the fear thing is very difficult for me, probably just as a father. So I kind of operate out of fear a little bit. And my daughter says, you know, you're bring up all of these scary propositions. I say, do not take Uber. Don't get in the car. You know, if you're going to go with a couple of people and call me when you get in the car. But obviously, you know, that's another big conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about trauma and how to help our children make their way through such experiences. Let's go back to the phone lines. And Tamara is calling from Odenton. Go right ahead with your question or comment. Still there, Tamara?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, go right ahead.
I just wanted to say, I think the last guy, his name was Aaron, he spoke about parenting and, you know, authority and things of that nature. And I just, you know, I get what he's saying, but we have to remember that this is a 9-year-old little boy. So although he should respect authority, he's 9, and he doesn't process information the way the adults may process information. And, you know, they briefly discussed about flight, fight, or freeze before. And we don't know what happened to this child before, what he's seen, what he's heard, what he's experienced. So in that moment, he may have chosen to fight. He may have felt like he was being, he was in a position that he needed to protect himself. So again, we don't know. Everything is a circular reaction. Something happens and we act off of that, and then something else happens and we act off of that, and it all just goes around and around in this circle. And the only way that we're going to be able to solve that problem is we have to figure out what caused that interaction to begin with. So yes, there is some parenting that needs to take place, but when it comes to trauma, there is more to it than just parenting. There is way more to it. And the conversation, as you all mentioned before, that yes, we have to be able to have these difficult conversations with our children. That is very important, because at the end of the day, we cannot keep them in the house, and we cannot just, you know, we can't protect them from the world by avoiding allowing them to experience the world. But we need to figure out what it is that we can do at home, what can be done at school and in our communities to protect our children.
Okay, thank you.
And that's it.
Thank you so much, Tamara, for those comments. So she covered a lot of bases, Dr. Streeter. But when we're dealing with children who have experienced some kind of trauma, are there instances more often than not, right, where parents are dealing with things or have dealt with traumas in their childhood? Does that make them more equipped to help their children, or does it work in the reverse? And is that a sort of a fair question?
Right. One thing that we know for sure, and I know from years of therapy, is that when you don't deal with your own trauma, it's very possible to pass that trauma down to your children. Because what happens when you've been traumatized, and when you've been traumatized over and over again, is you basically form a maladaptive way of coping. Mm-hmm. And if that's your way of coping, and now your child is not only being taught that, but you're modeling that for them, then they're going to take that on too. So the biggest impact that parents have on children in terms of their trauma is re-traumatizing them, because they haven't dealt with their own stuff.
And so, Yolanda, what do you hear in those peer counseling sessions when you have parents and children who witnessed, you know, violence to those close to them, mm-hmm. to friends, family. Can you sort of share with us a little bit the reactions that you see? Are there some commonalities in what those experiences that you hear and see in that in those peer counseling sessions?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of people are angry. Angry with whether it be the perpetrator, whether it be the person who committed the crime. Then you have people who are guilty. They feel like they've done something to deserve what has happened or what has taken place. It's just a myriad of emotions and feelings that people are experiencing, and a lot of times it is a commonality among them, which makes it good in that peer group, because when one person starts talking, then another one will say, yeah, I experienced that as well.
And that's where I was going next. I know we have Dr. Streeter and Dr. Mance here who can talk to family members and children mm-hmm. and are trained in that. Mm-hmm. But that was my next question. When you sort of have a peer situation going on there, that's sort of a different dynamic. Mm-hmm, do you think it helps those sort of the walls come down a little bit?
In my opinion, yes, I think it does, because a lot of times people will shelter themselves or kind of pull themselves away because they feel different, especially when we talk about teens and having lost someone or dealt with a traumatic situation. They don't want to feel different from their friends, and so a lot of times they will seclude themselves and not really talk about it. But when they do come to these groups and they hear that someone else is feeling the way they are or experience what they have, then it does bring those walls down, and they will open up and begin to start talking. Knowing that there's someone else who really knows and understands what they're feeling or what they're going through.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our discussion tonight is a trauma that's being dealt with or that young people have gone through, and how we deal with that as parents and as people who take care of children, and how best to sort of help shepherd them through that. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. And Samay is calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Samay.
Hey, how you doing? So I heard you guys mentioning that we need to open up conversations and dialogues. That's really true. We need to start talking more about trauma and how it's affecting us, because it's affecting us across all boards. I mean, you're getting trauma in first person, and you're also seeing it online. You're seeing it on Facebook. You're seeing it on Instagram. You're seeing it on across all platforms. And, I mean, it's affecting all of us in some type of way. I was just listening to you on 96.3, and you mentioned that it affects them, and it has, like, a change on the brain. It kind of changes the mentality of the way a person acts. Now, that's true, because I've witnessed several altercations on Instagram where it's blatantly, the cop is blatantly throwing the kid down, throwing one kid down, and then he's bleeding on his face. And, like, that personally made me mad. But you got to also think about the other kids that watch that. You know, they're going to go to school tomorrow, and they're going to be like, they're going to be pissed off. And then, you know, who God knows, like, a situation might happen to that kid, and he's going to remember, he saw online that kid got blood, like that kid got thrown down and he was bleeding, right. And then he's probably going to react in a different way.
All right, thank you so much, Samay. I want Dr. Mance to sort of address that, because he's saying, you know, even the after effects of what we see now, we see so much. Everyone has a phone. Everyone can record things. And his point is that, you know, this kid is going to catch a double dose, because then we get into traumatic things. Also, we're talking about, we haven't talked about this though, but bullying. And those can be traumatic experiences. You know, these children come back to school and folks say, I saw you get arrested and slammed up against the car and handcuffed or whatever it may be. And so is that handled differently? Should parents deal with that differently? Should school administrators, you know, how that's a whole kind of different territory.
It is, and I'm hearing more conversation related to trauma-informed care and trauma-informed education. So I think schools are beginning to listen, and communities beginning to have a more trauma-informed approach as well in regards to handling these types of incidences, and again, having those conversations.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out. Terry and Sarah, if you're on the phone line, stay right there. We'll get to your questions or comments tonight. Our conversation is about trauma and how young people are dealing with it and how parents and those who are responsible for those young people can help shepherd them through the issues that they may be facing. The phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We'll be back right after this timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment, and this is the second part of our three-part conversation this week on parenting. And specifically tonight, we're dealing with how parents help children deal with traumatic experiences. And again, it doesn't really have to just be parents, but it could be adults who can help children and what they're dealing with and the type of traumatic experiences that they're going through. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. And Sarah is calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. Sarah, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Thank you for having a question. What guidance or advice would you give to a parent who has had a child who's gone through a number of traumatic experiences, and now it seems as if the relationship is deteriorating because it feels the parent feels as if the child believes that they were never there to protect them in some of these incidents. What advice can you give in trying to build that relationship back up to, I guess, help in that situation?
Thank you so much, Sarah. Does anyone want to sort of take that? That's sort of a difficult one that you've got both sides may be suffering, but now the child is maybe placing blame on the parent. Is that something that you see, Yolanda, in your peer conversations, or is it sort of a shared grief when we're talking about the stories that you're dealing with friends and family members losing lives? Do you ever see a situation where there's a little friction within the family?
We have had situations where one parent has died or was killed, and we have had some children who faulted that surviving parent, feeling whatever the situation was, that the parent could have handled it different, or that they didn't help to protect that other parent. So they do sometimes take it out on that surviving parent. And then, too, when we lose someone, a lot of times we just have to find someone to blame. It's just a part of our nature. And so a lot of times that other surviving parent may be that person that is the blame is taken out on.
Should the parent just take the hit and sort of try to find someone else so that the child maybe can express their frustration or anger too? Is that something we parents just have to sort of swallow and realize it may happen and you may not be the person to sort of further a conversation? You have to find another conduit to do that? Or should the parent just try to barrel through and continue to try to have a dialogue with the child who's dealing with a traumatic experience, and the parent is also?
Right. And I think just with everything else in life, it takes some balance. The parent can't absolutely give up, but the parent has to also not necessarily barrel through, but really letting the child know that they're there to process it. They're there to pull in other family members that they think can help or mediate. They're there to help them get therapy or to seek family therapy. And understand that the parent, whatever age the parent is, they have a whole lot more experience in dealing with life than the child. So knowing that this child is trying to process something that oftentimes they're ill-equipped to process, so really being patient with the child and letting them, helping them to work through that and stand by their side, even if they're a silent partner at times, and just hearing the child out.
Thank you so much for your question. Sarah, let's go back to the phone lines. And Terry is calling from Columbia, Maryland. Terry, go right ahead.
Hi, it's Jerry.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I've been a school teacher for the last 20 years, from pre-K through high school. We have a saying at the high school, though. We say, paper chases children. We don't chase them. And I work in a public high school. Sometimes there are problems there. Sometimes kids do seem to be playing almost. They don't understand the consequences of their actions. But prior to that, I worked for 20 years in a prison as a correctional officer. We tried not to chase the inmates in that situation either. If you're there, and especially if you have a body cam on, that officer could have just as easily pushed the button, recorded that child for just a few seconds, gotten a community police officer, and had somebody else identify that child. The child was in the community. It's just like one in the school. We don't have to chase them even if we don't know who they are. Somebody's going to know who they are. Right. And once we find out, we can send somebody to talk to his parents.
Thank you,
sir. The child at 9 years old, they may not have known how serious the officer thought it was, but really, if the child hadn't really done anything to the car, how serious could it really be?
Thank you so much, Terry. And he sort of opened up a door for us, Dr. Streeter, in terms of parents, community, how all of that plays together. And you had talked about off air, you and Dr. Mance and Yolanda, about the trauma-informed care. First of all, what is that, and how does the community, along with parents, how do they all play a part sort of in a symbiotic way?
Right. I really appreciate that comment, because at the end of the day, at the community, as a community, we have to be trauma-informed, and that means recognizing that trauma manifests in all kinds of different ways. It manifests by acting out. It may manifest by a child shutting down. It may manifest by a child being hypervigilant or hyperactive, which we know that oftentimes our children are misdiagnosed as having ADHD when we have children that have had all of these traumas and now are just kind of reacting to the traumas. So if our community and our police officers, especially, and our parents and our teachers are trauma-informed, then they're going to ask certain questions before they react. And the main question when you talk about being trauma-informed is not asking a child, you know, what's wrong with you? But the question becomes, what has happened to you? Mm-hmm. What have you gone through? What have you seen that makes you respond in this way? Right.
And so, Yolanda, that sounds like in some ways we need as adults some kind of training tools to help equip us with that. And so I can hear listeners probably saying, so how do I get those? Do I get a book? Do I go see Dr. Mance, Dr. Streeter? Do I go see Yolanda at Roberta's house? Where do I get the tools to be able to ask the right questions? If I think I'm asking the right ones, but obviously I'm not, because our general reaction is, as Dr. Streeter said, what's wrong with you?
Right. I'd say all of the above. Definitely at Roberta's house, we do trainings on trauma-informed care. And again, these ladies, I'm sure. And then everyone has pretty much access to the internet, where you can go out there and research. There's books out there. There's tons of information out there about trauma and being trauma-informed.
Dr. Mance, can you talk about the importance of seeking psychological help when you're dealing with traumas, and how to know when you should seek that help?
I am so glad you opened that door. I just believe that as a community, we definitely need to utilize our mental health services. Oftentimes, we may have a stigma attached to mental health and mental health services, but recognizing when it is time to speak to someone, and it doesn't always have to be reactionary. It can be a preventive measure, but when there's impairment, meaning you're not able to function as you typically would have been able to function, whether it was at work, whether it was in the community, you're seeing a breakdown in your relationships, you're having difficulties concentrating, it's impacting other areas of your life. All of those can be kind of markers to tell you that maybe it's time to go and seek help, seek a professional. I think within our families and within our community, at times, we, particularly when it comes to trauma, and even if it, particularly if it's a more of a like molestation or sex-based like trauma, we tend to sweep it under the rug, or the perpetrator may be in the room, a part of the family. We just don't talk to that person, but they're still in the room. We don't necessarily handle. So is that intergenerational transmission of that trauma? So beginning to recognize that we do need treatment. That there are professionals available, there's private practice, there's community services, just like Roberta's house. There are different ways to for therapy and treatment. It doesn't necessarily have to be sitting in a room, but it can be in a group format. It can be community informed, whether it's through a lot of churches have mental health services, or even community organizations have a counselor. And so there are different ways that therapy can manifest.
Dr. Streeter, in our last few moments, is it different, and how do you, let me back up because I know it's different. How do we deal with, say, a toddler that's been through something traumatic, right, as a parent, versus a teenager or preteen? I mean, are those drastically different situations that we deal with? And obviously, I can't go through every type of traumatic experience, but do we have to be equipped differently as the music starts playing, right? Right. With preteens, toddlers, right. Teenagers?
So, developmental level is really important in being able to address the child and what they need at the developmental level that they're at. And it will look differently, but being able to be in tune. And as parents, we have to be in tune before stuff occurs, so that when things do occur and we do have those communications with our children, we're able to talk and process and get them the help that they need.
And I would think when they need help, you three are the type of people that we probably should go to if we can't handle those things on our own.
Absolutely.
She is Dr. Satira Streeter, licensed clinical psychologist and executive director of Ascension Psychological in Anacostia. Jashawn Mance is the assistant professor with the Department of Psychology at Howard University. And Yolanda Nelson Swain is program director with Roberta's House. Thank you all so much for joining us. And helping to guide us through this very important conversation. Thank you to all of our callers for sharing your thoughts, your concerns, and your experiences. Very important topic. That's the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, April 25th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The Connection is next. Have a great night.